You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
Welcome to this week's Signs of the Times podcast. I'm Henry.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Scott.
This week we've brought back our friend astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit.
We've dragged him back, kicking and screaming.
To continue our conversation. And the subject today is going to be energy and doomsday scenarios. We're not talking about New Agers waiting for Space Brothers or Christian fundamentalists who are waiting for Jesus. We are going to look more at the kind of scenarios that are being drawn up in research centers such as Sandia and corporations such as the Lambda Corporation. These are scientists and researchers who are, we would say, in the pay of the pathocrats, and they're working out the scenario for our future. But we also want to look at some of the work that is going on at Sandia in energy. And maybe Jean-Pierre can start off and tell us a bit about the Z or Z machine.
Well, everything tells around a person whose name is Gerald Yonas. Gerald Yonas is one of the chief of Sandia research and head of the scientific research. Sandia is the heart of the military-industrial complex, American complex. They produce the most sophisticated weapons in the country. They have activity in various fields, including robotics, nuclear weapons, beams, and so on. I went to Sandia in 1976, and I met Gerald Yonas, who began to start to achieve fusion with electron beams. He had a huge machine that was described in Scientific American in 1979. You have a picture of this machine there. And he is a specialist for very high currents, high voltage, and he focuses his energy on targets. And he has tried during 3 years to increase the pressure and the temperature in the target. Well, until the last few years, the temperature was growing quite slowly, and I think it must be around 2000. They announced that they had a temperature reaching 2 millionth degree. And they said they were close to get 3 millionth degree and close to get the condition for fusion process. And then suddenly, new results were revealed, and the order of magnitude of the temperature were completely different. It was 2 billionth degrees.
So in a very short time, they went from having a system that could produce 2 or 3 million degrees to 2 billion degrees.
Exactly. It's a jump with a factor 1,000. Well, we have papers, and I see here a paper in Life Science in which I can read, scientists have produced superheated gas exceeding temperature 2 billion degrees Kelvin. It's hotter than the temperature in the interior of the sun. This was accomplished in the Z machine in the Sandia National Laboratory. Chris Dinay, who was the leader of the project, said, "At first, we were disbelieving. We repeated the experiment many times to be sure we had a true result." Well, we could describe this machine. Imagine a cage for birds, and this cage is made with very thin wires. Mm-hmm. In this 100 wires, metallic wires, the guys of Sandia inject 20 million amperes. This produces magnetic field, and all physicists know that this object tends to collapse towards the axis. Right.
20 million amperes. How is that a lot? Is that a little? I have no way of judging. You know,
that's a good question, because is it science fiction intensity? No, absolutely not. In 1954, the Russian Sakharov produced 100 million uppers with a device he invented, which is a magnetohydrodynamic device. I will not describe it here because it...
Well, we've already touched on the MHD in our previous podcast with you, and so listeners who are interested in that can go back and listen to those podcasts.
Well, you know, MHD is a fantastic field, and this result of Sakharov is a demonstration what we can do with that. For an example, this result of 100 million uppers corresponds to low-level technology. I will not say that you could do that in high school, but, you know, in a small university, because the primeval energy is a chemical, it's an explosive. So Sakharov using a condensator bank and an explosive with a device 1 meter long could produce 100 million uppers. Well, it was his way to produce intensity. Sandia has much more money, and they produce electricity in a different way. But, you know, this is not a problem to produce 20 million uppers. And okay, even if other country would follow this idea and do their own experiment, it would not require a fantastic amount of money. They could use a Sakharov system, you know.
Are we talking here about an electricity power generating station, for example?
No, it's pulse. It's pulse.
Oh, it's a pulse.
It could pulse, you know. The duration of the Sandia experiment is 100 nanoseconds.
Okay.
But it's large enough, you know. We don't need a lot of time. And so these wires tends to focus on the axis. And this idea to focus matter somewhere in order to rise the temperature and the density is a general idea to get fusion for pulse system. For an example, in Livermore in 1976, they had lasers. And with these lasers, they tried to produce the fusion too. The target then is a small, tiny sphere, some tenth millimeter diameter, with every hydrogen inside, liquid. And they focus the energy of lasers. In 1976, I saw the Janus experiment, but Shiva experiment with the 24 lasers, terawatt laser, was in construction. And then the lasers bring energy at the surface of the tiny sphere, where there is a material which is called a pusher. This pusher expands. It expands outside, but also inside, and this expansion inside compresses the liquid hydrogen, and this was expected to produce fusion. But it's impossible to have a spherical symmetry, to conserve a spherical symmetry. You know, take some material in your hand, if you turn to compress, it will go between your fingers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it appears that it worked with a cylinder, because if you consider the system of Sandia and Jonas, you have a cage, and this cage is focusing towards the axis. And what was...
So it's not a square cage, it's a round cage.
It's exactly. Okay. It's a cylinder. It's a round cage. And this material focused to the axis, giving a hot plasma whose diameter is 1 millimeter and a half. And the temperature rises so much that they were disbelieving. They did the experiment many times. So people could ask, how do they know that they have such high temperature? They have two ways to investigate. The first, when your 20 million amperes are flowing in a very tiny cord of plasma, the magnetic field is very strong around, and then you have magnetic pressure that you can size, so you can evaluate the value of the temperature inside, and you need 2 billion degree to prevent the implosion of the object, and to have that we call stagnation condition. Stagnation condition, when the current flows in the wires are vaporized, transform into a plasma, but this plasma focus on the axis, and then you have an implosion, and then the system stops on stagnation condition. And this stagnation condition can occur if the magnetic pressure is balanced by the thermal pressure. So it requires a 2 billion degree. But they have a second way to measure the temperature. At such temperature, the plasma emits X-rays, and the people of Sandia had systems to make measurement on the wavelength of the radiation emitted. They could record it, including time, and then it appeared that it was perfectly 2 billion degrees. This temperature is incredible, you know, for a physicist. It's another world. And now, why is it so important to have such temperature? Well, you know that in tokamaks, in systems like ITER in France, people try to produce fusion at 100 million degrees in a constant duration system, a steady-state system. Here it's completely different, it's just pulse system, like explosion motor, you know, boom, 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 boom. And in the center of the sun, the temperature is much lower. You are only 15 million degrees, and this fusion is very slow. In tokamak, we expect to have a much higher rate. And then 100 million degrees is considered as the threshold to get fusion with deuterium, tritium. Deuterium has two nuclei. As a nucleus with two proton and neutrons, and tritium as a proton and two neutrons. So 2 plus 3 gives 5. 5 is one nucleus of helium and one neutron. And these neutrons produce radioactivity. Nothing can trap
it. So the conventional forms of nuclear power, as we know, are not clean.
Exactly, you know. But if you can rise to higher temperature, like 500 million degree, you may obtain the fusion of lithium plus hydrogen. And this fusion produces two helium and no neutrons. So this is clean fusion. And that's a new idea that people have to consider right now. Nuclear physics and nuclear plants are not bad, basically. You have bad fusion and good fusion. Bad fusion produces radioactivity. Good fusion produces helium. And you can inflate balloons for babies with that, you know. And that's incredible. So at with 500 million degrees, you can achieve fusion with lithium and hydrogen. With a billion degrees, you can achieve fusion with boron and hydrogen. Boron has 11 objects in the nucleus, plus ordinary hydrogen, and all these materials are very common on the Earth, and this second fusion gives three heliums and no neutrons, so they are clean fusions. So you get a plasma with very hot helium, and the question is, what do I do with this plasma? How can I produce electricity? The answer is very simple, and is provided by magnetohydrodynamics. You have a solenoid. The solenoid contains all the system, and this plasma expands in this magnetic field, and the compression of the magnetic field produces induced current, and this current is just can be sent to the external use. You know, it's a direct conversion. You have no steam engine, you have no rotating machine, you have nothing. You're just a solenoid. So the most modern system to produce energy is the most simple you can imagine, you know.
And so to summarize, to see if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, the potential of the Z or Z machine, if we take for a moment the fact that it's real, is that it gives us the means to produce limitless amounts of clean energy.
Absolutely.
And it would solve the energy problems for the entire world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in addition, there is another problem. When the people of Sandia operates their machine, the bird cage collapse, they inject kinetic energy. That means this plasma has kinetic energy directed towards the axis. And then they have X-rays, and they can measure the quantity of energy emitted by the X-ray. And this quantity is 4 times larger than the kinetic energy. So they have to face a very strange problem. Is it a violation of the principle of conservation of an animator? Where does this energy come from, really? Mm-hmm. And in the paper of Heinz of February, he tried. Heinz is a guy I knew before in Warsaw. He was a young researcher. I met Jonas and I met Heinz too. And he was specialist in the magnetohydrodynamics too. Well, he tried to introduce an interpretation through magnetohydrodynamic concept in order to explain how the magnetic energy could be converted directly in thermal energy. It was published in this paper in a physical review letter. And as Arc pointed out, it took 1 year to publish this. So it shows that it was some problem to release this information.
Well, we should say to our readers who don't know this publication.
Yes, but serious.
It's a very serious publication, and it is there, as you may or may not know, it takes a long time, sometimes several years, to get publications into some of the other physics journals. And this one was created to permit the more rapid publication of news such as this, which is why it's called the letters. And the fact that it took a year is indicative. That's a long time for something to...
Just a remark, that's a long time. Well, Heinz tried to explain this extra energy. But recently, on May 8th, he gave an interview to Live Science. We have this interview there, and I can read. Sandia consultant Malcolm Heinz theorized that some unknown energy source is involved, which is providing the machine with an extra jolt of energy just as the plasma ions are beginning to slow down. This sentence is fascinating, you know. And I can read too. One thing that puzzles scientists is that the high temperature was achieved after the plasma's ions should have been losing energy and cooling. So you have a mystery. First, you have an enormous amount of energy, and then you have too much energy. Where does this energy come from? You know, some have ideas. And what is very interesting is that Heinz himself went back on his own paper, because he is now convinced that his explanation is not believable. And I think
the explanation that he gave 30 years ago?
What?
The explanation that he gave 30 years ago?
No, not 30 years. No.
This is another paper, that he just written?
No. In the paper of February. February, he gave an explanation.
Okay.
To
And then in March he changed it. In a period of several weeks.
Exactly. It shows that there is a problem. I have had a recent contact by mail with Gerald Jonas. And I asked him question about this amount of energy, and his answer was that after the compression, the 20 million ampere was still flowing in the plasma core, and that joule heating could explain this increase. But I'm not very convinced, and Heinz is not convinced too. So, two news. First, we have a new source of energy. And the second, where does it come from? And, the listener could ask, but, okay, they focus their metallic wires on plasma cords, but it produces energy. But what does this energy come from? Well, replace the axis of the system by a mixture, lithium hydrogen or bor hydrogen. And then the compression makes the fusion mixture to be converted into helium. And then you can get the energy, produce a pulse of electricity. And we have system to make the, to create a cycle. It's like a explosion motor. Compression, fusion, expansion, compression, fusion, expansion. You store a certain percentage of produced energy in order to charge a condensator bank, and then you do it again. A priori, the problem are solved. You know, it's much easier to make short duration experiments than to stand tokamak with 100 million degrees, you know. Consider the story of the tokamak since 40 years. Each time you try to get more, each time you have new problems. Okay? And here, we don't know where the problems could come from. The problems are solved.
Well, the problems are solved, but you're also saying that they don't even understand how it's working and where it's coming from. Sounds to me like there's still a few problems to work out.
You know, it's like if you reverse the problem in physics. Sometimes you predict something and it doesn't happen. But sometimes something happens and you don't
predict.
What do you prefer?
In discussing this over the last couple of days with you, this limitless amount of power obviously can be used for military purposes. And it would be a way of putting tremendous power in the hands of almost anyone.
That's perfectly true, you know. But take a knife, you have it in your kitchen, but you can kill somebody with. You know? You have nothing in technology, you cannot be transformed into a weapon. Yeah. Well, nuclear weapons are especially able to destroy the planet. And at the present time, if you want to enter the club of nuclear nations, you have to get enrichment of uranium. Mm-hmm. And this prevents too much country to enter the club. The last one is iron that wants to come in.
Brazil as well.
Brazil.
Which is interesting.
India.
Because Brazil at the minute, India is kind of already there. But Brazil is on the same path as Iran. They've just completed their first kind of enrichment. But there's no problem with Brazil doing this. I mean, hardly anybody knows. I'm looking at the surprised look on all of your faces.
Perhaps
no one knows that Brazil is doing exactly the same thing at exactly the same time as Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Brazil hasn't threatened, you know, to destroy any other countries,
yes,
which we are told that Iran has. But then that's a different topic altogether. But let me just be a little bit pessimistic here, if I can.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Because you know, this talk of this new technology that will provide limitless energy for the entire planet. My question is, why do we need, I can understand why we need, it would be nice to have limitless energy, but what is wrong with the energy that we have been using for the past 100 years? Specifically, normal electricity and carbon-based fuels like petrol, oil, etc. What is wrong with this? Why? You know, I'm not against progress, but you know, what is the problem with normal electricity and petrol?
You know, at the beginning of the century, we started to use electricity. Before we had horses. Yes, we had horses. We used the horses to move our machines. And we used steam engines. It's like the introduction of steam engines. Our world will be completely changed. That's all.
Yeah.
And of course, about the military
Let me just finish that point.
Yes.
As I said, in answering the question myself, the problem obviously is that at the minute there are many, many millions of people who don't have electricity, and many, many millions of people who don't have access to, you know, the modern technologies that electricity and particularly oil provides to people in the West and in developed countries. So this is obviously a problem. We have millions of people starving, etc., etc. So the idea that there would be a new technology that would provide energy for everyone, the entire planet, forever, is wonderful. But the problem, as I see it, is that, as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason why millions of people on the planet today should be starving or should be deprived of the type of lives they can have, the modern lives they can have with modern technology. But they are. And this is what I see getting to the core of the problem, which is that there's no reason. There is more than enough petrol, despite what people say about peak oil. There's more than enough petrol or oil to supply, and has been, obviously, to supply the needs of the entire planet since it began. There's more than enough energy, electricity, capable of being produced to give everybody on the planet a modern, comfortable life like people in the West have. But that isn't the case. It should be no surprise, it's no mystery to anyone. The reason that we have this contrast in this, you know, rich and poor, is because certain people wanted it that way. And we, in our last podcast, we cited the example of the lowest paid worker in the U.S. earns about $11,000 per annum, while last year the chief executive, the president of one of the big oil companies in the U.S.
ExxonMobil,
earned $13,700 per hour. Now, before we would embark on any new technology, I think to ensure that we have the right people in positions of power to distribute that energy correctly, we should address the imbalance that is going on at the minute. Because if we leave, it's all very well to have an unlimited source of energy, but look at the people who are controlling it. Look at what they have done for the past 100 years. They have hoarded it and they have enriched themselves to a disgraceful degree at the expense of millions of people around the planet. And why would we have any hope that these same people would now turn around and say, oh, let's give the entire world limitless energy? In my opinion, they're not going to do it. So to a certain extent, the existence of this energy is irrelevant. The existence of this ability to give everyone free energy is irrelevant because of the type of people that are going to control it. They're not interested in helping anyone except themselves.
I would probably surprise you, but this new energy is very difficult to control. If you want to control nuclear energy, it's a high level of sophistication and technological and money, you know. But the experiments of Jonas and Sandhya are not very, very difficult. I will not say that all little countries of Africa could make that, but if it's true, and personally I believe it's true.
But it could be given to them.
It can be, yes.
Why do they have to make it themselves? If America can make limitless energy, then America can give this energy free. Because it's free, they can give it for free.
But no, the energy, the idea is free.
Yes.
You cannot patent it, you know.
No.
You cannot patent fusion, you know. Sorry. Well, so...
your hope, if I understand what you're saying, your hope is that this technology, although we couldn't do it in our garage... It is simple enough that now that the idea is out there, that the cat is out of the bag,
absolutely,
that other people could say, let's try working on this, so that the idea would escape the confines of the military-industrial complex in the United States, and then other people could do it.
Absolutely.
But who? Name these people for me.
No, I would like to...
I'm a pessimist like you.
Who's going to take this energy?
I'm just trying to understand Jean-Pierre's argument here.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it.
I'd like to point something, to indicate something very clearly, you know. It's not science fiction. It's only fusion. It is known since more than half a century. We know that if we can achieve 500 million degree, we can make the fusion of lithium plus hydrogen. It is the fuel of the atomic bombs. Atomic bombs are filled with lithium hydrogen. It's not liquid hydrogen, you know. We know that if we can achieve a billion degree, we can make fusion of boron plus hydrogen. It's not science fiction. Mm-hmm. So it is not the energy of vacuum, you know. It is not this kind of idea, very smoky energy coming from
zero
nothing.
Point energy.
Zero point energy. No, that's simple physics, classical physics. But nature has been nice with us, and we achieved good focusing of the shockwave.
So in a sense, you're saying that all it would take is some philanthropist somewhere to gather together a team of physicists to start working on these kinds of ideas independently of the military-industrial complex, and then be able to give it away. Essentially, it's an argument, something like that.
Take, for example, the Chinese. The Chinese, there are a lot of people. I have read in the newspaper something, if all people in China would use the same energy as an American, we should need another planet. Another planet for petrol, another planet for the pollution. So,
but if China were to take it, in these ideas, and perhaps they already have, this is...
And you know, what use could they do with? They have very poor earth, they need water, they have desert. With this, you know, something you have to put in your head, this application is not to feed your instrument in your kitchen, you know. It's to use this electricity to bring water in the desert, to change the earth, because you have it's unlimited energy. And this you cannot imagine, because we have limited energy today because we need fuel, and you have a limited amount of fuel. We have the peak oil. Somebody says we are going to reach the end of the petrol, but it is not the end of lithium, end of birth.
We don't even buy the fact that we're at the end of petroleum. Because we don't buy into the fact that it's a fossil fuel. We tend to think that the abiotic hypothesis is accurate.
That it's renewable.
That it's renewable, yeah. And that the whole oil is another manipulation that's being carried out to keep us in chains, essentially.
Yes, but you know, the wind energy, the tidal energy, the solar energy, you can use it. But what you can get from fusion has nothing to do with respect to the order of magnitude.
But then we come back to China, and as we've been discussing here, China is not a free society. The leaders of China have an iron grip over 1.3 billion people. And so even if China does get this technology, what hope can we have that they would make it available for the good of humanity, or would they just continue in the ways that they have now to use it to keep people even more entrapped in the chains that they're already in?
No, it's not only the question for the Chinese, it's a question for everybody, for all the men on the earth. We were talking about the military application of this discovery. If you can achieve 2 billion degrees, you focus it on a target of lithium plus hydrogen, and you have H-bomb, and a very useful H-bomb, because it could be as large as you want and as little as you want. You can have a very small H-bomb with small power. You can use it, and
you can inject it in somebody's neck. And
No, but it was a democracy for H-bomb. H-bomb from any country. You know, Luxembourg could bring H-bombs. Monaco could build H-bomb too. Yes, that's crazy, you know.
We could build one.
Yes, we could. No, but you know,
what a great world. Everybody has their own little pocket H-bombs.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, so...
Imagine road rage in the United States. You get upset with somebody throwing an H-bomb in their car.
Yes, so suppose we are gods, and we say to men, no, you have the possibility to destroy yourself. Anybody can build his own H-bomb. So is it anything better to do? Try to find some, you know? Sakharov said that in a talk. Sakharov, when he received the Nobel Prize, he had a talk in Stockholm. He didn't want to Stockholm himself, but Elena Bonner read the paper, and he said, now we are reaching the time where there is no time to take a weapon and to attack the other. It's time to help each other. It's time to arrange the planet.
And we're certainly in agreement with you about that. Yes, it is a time. It is way past the time to do that. Mm. The question is, how?
Depends on the men, not on the leaders. The leaders will lose their power, you know, if the energy is dissolved, expands. No?
We'll pick up our conversation with astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit next week. For more information, you can go to Jean-Pierre's site at www.jp-petit.com. That's jp-petit.com. And from Jean-Pierre's site, you can get access to all of his comic books, his bande dessinée, on the site Savoir Sans Frontières. And the link is on his site. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.